Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest trends, techniques, and strategies in this wonderful world of marketing. Now, I am excited to introduce my guest today, Jeff Greenfield. He is the CEO of Provalytics, a company that is really at the forefront of AI-driven attribution platforms for this privacy-first world that we're living in. Now, Jeff's journey really spans over a couple of decades of creating really impactful marketing campaigns that have added billions of dollars in value. He is no stranger to navigating digital measurement challenges. It's what every marketer struggles with, am I right? Having created the very first multi-touch attribution platform in 2008. Since then, his work has continuously pushed the envelope on how we understand ROI in marketing. Today, Jeff's insights are more crucial than ever as we really face this privacy changes that challenge the traditional marketing measurement. Well, I think everything challenges marketing measurement, am I right? Now, in this particular episode, we're going to focus on how marketers can successfully navigate digital measurement, especially with GA4. Now, Jeff breaks down the significant differences between GA4 and its predecessor, UA, also known as Universal Analytics, and what marketers really need to know to stay ahead. We'll explore critical issues surrounding privacy cookies and AI's role in future-proofing measurement, and what I always aim to give you guys practical advice for achieving better marketing ROI, especially in this new environment of GA4. Now, pragmatic in his approach, he does share his thoughts on why GA4 should not be treated as its quote-unquote single source of truth, and offers strategies for understanding the entire marketing funnel beyond clicks. We also talk about how to leverage impressions, content performance, AI-powered tools to create a more accurate and holistic view of campaign performance. And if you're struggling with GA4 or you're looking to improve your marketing analytics strategy, the insights from this episode will give you the tools to move forward. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Jeff, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. Very excited to have you on here so that we dive into all things kind of GA4, the good, the bad, the ugly, and maybe uglier. I don't know. We'll get into it.
There's definitely a lot of ugly with GA4, but it's one of these things that it's not going anywhere, but people need, it's like buyer beware. Especially if it's free, and GA4 is free. But yeah. Thank you for having me here, Katya.
Well, before we dive into that, because I have a feeling that we could definitely talk about that for hours, I'd love for the audience to get to know you a little bit. So I have my starter questions. My first question is, what was your first marketing role? Whether it had marketing in the title or not, what would you consider your first marketing role?
You mean as in like a real job or like a regular role? Because I would say my first marketing role, I was 7 years old and I decided that I wanted to be a magician. And so I convinced my parents to print up business cards for me and I started passing them out so I could start doing birthday parties for other 7 and 8 and 9 year olds. So that was really my first marketing role, was as a magician at a very young age.
Well, now I have to ask, did you get booked?
I did get booked. Yeah, I got booked. I did. Absolutely. And magic has always been a part of my life. I worked as a magician all throughout college, all throughout grad school, and then went through a career change due to an injury when I was in my 30s and went back to magic and ended up traveling the country, working at colleges as a magician. And interestingly enough, that was around the mid-90s, which right when the internet was taking off, and I was forced to make my own website, which in the mid-90s was really difficult, but I did it. And that led me kind of down this path that eventually led me to the world of measurement, which is where I live today. And my company today is Provalytics. But along the way, I've done everything from roles of promoting myself as a magician. I had a branded entertainment firm. I was an executive producer for a faux reality show that was a marketing project for a client. So there's been lots of different roles. I've sat in a lot of different seats that now I'm kind of in the middle of it all in the measurement world, because we get to see all the things that marketers do that they're praying has an impact on sales or their KPIs. And we get to be kind of Switzerland to figure out what's working and what's not working. And it's an interesting place to be, because sometimes they like what we say and a lot of times they don't like what we say. So it's an interesting place to be.
So what exactly is your current role?
My current role is I'm the CEO and co-founder of a company called Provalytics.
Okay.
Provalytics is an AI-driven, cookie-less, tagless measurement company for a privacy-first world. So we take in data from medium to large-size advertisers, and then we use statistical modeling, so AI and machine learning, to let them know what's working and not, and what's not working. Essentially, that old adage, half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. The problem is I don't know which half. So we're able with math and statistics to solve that. And that's what our platform does, is tell them what's working, what's not working, and where to spend your next marketing dollar to get more bang for your buck.
Yeah, I love that. Sounds like it's attribution at its best. Now, I always want to know, what is it that you love about what you currently do? But with the good is the bad. What, if anything, can I pluck out of your job that would make it perfect? So let's start with the good. What is it that you love about what you do?
What I love about what I do is, in my current role, most of what I do is I have amazing conversations every single day with marketers. And what's great about those conversations is that marketers got into marketing because they're creative people. They're artists. They love what they do, and that something got a spark in them where they want to go into a room and tell their big ideas, and they want to see them executed. And then they got into this role, and all of a sudden they realize, I am using Excel more than my CPA friends. This is not fun. I wasn't born a numbers person. But the conversations I get to have are about, hey, our platform does that numbers work for you. So you can take a chill and relax, and you can start to be more creative and start to focus on the things that you really care about. So in my role, it's really, I get to have great conversations that lead to a lot of less stress for marketers.
And I'm here for it. I am here for the less stress. I'm here for the, well, I'm a spreadsheets gal. And I always tell people I'm a data dork. I'm all about, what are the numbers telling me? There's a story to tell. And that's going to definitely inform my strategy. Now, that's what you love, talking to marketers. What, if anything, could I pluck out?
Well, I'm a marketer myself. So I'm a creative person.
Yeah.
And yet there's aspects to growing and running a company that deal with Excel. So there's finance stuff that I have to deal with that I absolutely positively hate. So if I could turn that over to someone else, in fact, this week, I'm in the process of onboarding someone to take over all of that accounting nightmare away from me.
Yes.
That makes my job, like, that makes me smile, because I don't have to deal with that. I don't mind the spreadsheet stuff that I do on behalf of clients, because that's helping them.
Yeah.
And I know that my own spreadsheet stuff is helping me, but I don't have the patience for it. It doesn't make my job fun.
I think you are not alone in that. And I love so hard that you say that marketing is creative, because I'm always preaching that. And typically when I'm talking about what it is that I love, because I love what it is that I do, like it is both my job and my hobby. Hence, I even have this podcast just so that I could talk about it, because I really do love it, you know, and you have to be able to stay up to date on the trends, which is also why I love having conversations with people like you. But how are you staying up to date on the trends?
I try to force myself to learn something new at least once a month, and not just learn something new, but try to implement some sort of new marketing technique that involves something new that people are talking about. Like, you know, last year I started testing cold email and started playing around with it. Then I stopped it, and now I've heard about a new platform. So now I'm starting to test that and play around with it for customer acquisition. So for me, keeping up with things, it's about wanting to tinker. And marketers, we love to tinker with things and play with things. But you know what's interesting, because you brought up a great point, and it just kind of led me off on another thought, which is one of the things that we've seen over the last 20 years is marketing has shifted more towards digital, which means all of us marketers have to spend more time in spreadsheets and deal with the numbers. What I've seen over my time is that I've seen less creative input. It used to be 25, 30 years ago, there was a lot of emphasis placed on creative, a lot of input with that, and especially for agencies where almost every month they would offer new variations on creative. I don't see that in my seat at all anymore. It's less and less. And I think it's because things for marketers, things have just gotten more complicated. This whole data-driven world, all of these different channels to contend with. You know, now we've got retail media popping up. I was just on a call earlier today where someone from the finance world told me that App Loving, which is this app measurement platform for in-game, is now starting to offer a new e-commerce channel because they can target people in-game. So like, if you're like a marketer, like you need to know about App Loving so you can mention it to your client. And it's like, when do you have time to even start thinking about new creatives? And the crazy thing is that creatives are 70%. So your creative, your messaging, that's 70% of the effectiveness of your marketing. It doesn't matter where you advertise. What matters is what you're saying and how you're saying it. That's the most important. And yet we spend less and less time with that. And it's because things have just gotten so damn complicated.
They have. And I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like the level of responsibility, or not level of responsibility, level of what marketing is responsible for, very different, has increased. And it's not just like the digital stuff. I find myself being pulled in many directions. And it's ironic. I had a conversation with someone from my team today, and we kind of chuckled because we're like, I mean, marketing gets it all, right? Like we are pulled in many different directions. And one of the things that I said to her this morning was, well, like my workday bingo card is filled with all sorts of randomness today that I like, and none of it really hits the marketing stuff, right? Like it's so interesting how many directions you can get pulled as a marketer.
Well, a lot of it is because we understand like the digital world. To be a marketer today, you have to really understand the web. And the web encompasses so many parts of a business these days. So you get pulled into all of these directions. But on that line about what you're held responsible for, when we think about like marketing, like if we were to think of like a typical e-commerce site, the way that marketers are held responsible for things is a little crazy. So when we buy marketing, we invest dollars to buy eyeballs. That's what we do. We buy media impressions. Those media impressions drive awareness. And when awareness is at a certain level, people will walk into our store. That's what they do. That's how marketing works. So reality is that if there's an e-commerce site, if your store is online, your marketing job is over once people come to the website. Once you're at the website, now it's the website team's job to merchandise. So there's like different people that handle marketing inside of a retail store versus the marketing to get them in the store. And yet we're still held responsible as marketers for actual sales, like in e-commerce. Whereas the reality is that the team that gets them from that front door through the sale, it's sometimes in e-commerce companies, it's a totally different team. It's like the website team. And I always say to marketing teams, I'm like, you know that your website like goes down a lot during the month? Like, do you ever hear from the website team? Do they ever tell you, hey, you know, things are going to be down on Saturday for a couple of hours so you can turn your ads off. No. And when you ask them, was the website down? They're never going to tell you. So I always tell marketing teams to like, go get one of those free monitors. It checks like every minute and we'll send you an alert to your phone when the website's down. Because if it's down for like 15, 20 minutes, you may want to pause those meta ads that you're spending thousands of dollars on each day. And and then bring it up in the next meeting to say, hey, you know, things didn't do well this weekend because the website wasn't working. Because our job is to get people there. But if the store is not open, they can't buy.
No, that is so true. And I love that we're talking about websites because I think one, it's a very good conversation. And then two, it's a great segue for what we want to talk about today, which is GA4. So I think the best place for us to start is tell me what the differences are between GA4 and Universal Analytics, you know, GA4 versus UA. What is it that I need to know? What are you telling everybody, like, be on the lookout for?
Well, you know, I don't really know that there is a big difference because I know about GA4. I know enough about GA4 to say, be aware of these things with GA4 because it's free. And Universal Analytics, my understanding of UA was that was around before GA4. It was the Universal Analytics, which was Google Analytics, which was there. And then last July of 2023, they said, hey, you got to update your code because of all these new ways that we're going to do things. And everyone had to update their code. And now they have Google Analytics 4. Some advertisers that were very large and very involved, they were able to get a special dispensation from the Google gods to give them an extra year to switch over. I urge anyone that is still in that world to please just get it done. Because what ends up happening is that things look different between Universal and GA4 because it's totally different methodologies. And this is what's important is that if you were to put Adobe, which is another type of web analytics on your website, along with GA4, along with another one, you would probably get three different versions of the truth. And so that's an important thing to understand. Like, you know, what that really means is that GA4 is a version of the truth. It's not the ultimate truth, but it is a truth that for most companies, it is the single source of truth. But it's different than what it was before because of how it aggregates data, because they wanted to create a single type of code that could be used across the entire world, which has different privacy changes going on. So it's all about aggregating data results. So you can't dig in and figure out that who are the specific users. That's really what it comes down to. It's all about privacy these days. And that goes along with some of the same changes that we saw with iOS, some of the cookie changes in Safari and that we saw in Firefox. So the world is moving from, for 20 years, we were able to get every bit of data on every single user and we're able to target like crazy to where now we're actually back to the future. We're actually now where things were before digital, which is an example of how far the digital publishers moved. They moved a little too far, which forced kind of regulation to come in and say, you need to move back. So that's kind of where we are now.
I feel like with any type of just kind of new trend, new technology, new changes such as this, is that it's the Wild West before like the law comes in and says, hey, now, I know you could do that, but that's not cool. I know I'm totally dumbing it down, but like that's, I feel like that's what happens every time a new digital channel just kind of opens up and then a new technology opens up as well too. People don't know how to use it. And so, you know, for the love of adoption, like people use it and abuse it until we have to be able to regulate it. Now, my question to you in regards to GA4, I was going to ask you what you think the benefits are, but I have a feeling that your list of non-benefits is going to be a little bit longer. So one thing I heard you say is beware of what it is that you're looking at. It's an aggregate, but what other things should I be aware of?
Well, I'll answer the first question. It's free. So that's okay. Great.
Is that the only thing on the pro list?
And it's good web analytics. And what I mean by web analytics is that it's a great way to tell when someone is on your website or when people are on your website, what are they doing on there?
Yeah.
That's what it's great for. It also has built into it Google Tag Manager, which is great for adding advertising tags from different vendors, or if you want to add something that does A/B testing and things like that. But what's important to remember about GA4 and Universal Analytics before that is, where did it come from? Mm-hmm. And most people don't know, but the secret to where it came from is in these things called UTM tags or UTM codes, like UTM source and UTM medium. Most people don't know that UTM stands for Urchin Tracking Module. And that came from the original code. So Google Analytics originally started as a web analytics platform called Urchin. And Urchin was distributed for free with all these web servers. And it did a really good job in terms of counting how many people were on your website, what pages they went through, what they did on the website, essentially like the basics of GA4. That's what Urchin is. And they carried that over. And now everyone is so used to UTMs that they don't change it to anything else. So it started as this free product. It stayed as a free product, but what they've now done is they've expanded it so it kind of envelops all of their ad products. And it now has become like this pseudo measurement product, which it's really not. It's not a measurement product. It measures clicks. So it does a very good job of what people do once they get to your website. It also does a good job of telling you where they came from and how they got to your website. But as you start to dig into your data, most people will find out that what GA4 tells us is that most people just show up. They come from like organic. We don't really know where they came from. They just show up. So there's very few that they can count from. But the problem that I have in terms of people using it as a measurement product is that it goes against all the rules of how marketing works. If you remember, we just said a couple of minutes ago that the way marketing works is you invest dollars and you buy eyeballs, which are impressions. And impressions' job is to build awareness. And then when awareness is built enough, people will come into your store. That's kind of the last step of marketing. That's what we should be held responsible for.
Yeah.
And if your store is online, those are clicks. And that's what GA4 picks up. It picks up that last action, those clicks, but it misses all of those impressions, which is what you're actually buying. Now, here's where things get kind of crazy, is that I'm not telling a whole truth here. GA4 does include impressions. It includes YouTube impressions. So it includes impressions from a product that Google owns. So it will give you a full picture of YouTube. But if you're trying to compare YouTube against your Meta buy, it will show YouTube having better favor than Meta because it's comparing Meta's clicks to YouTube's impressions. And that's the problem. And that's why it shouldn't be called GA4. It should be called Google's Analytics version 4, because it is Google's analytics. It's not this GA4 ultimate measurement product, because it's missing that first step, which are the actual impressions.
So are you saying that it's just measuring? This is going to sound like I'm repeating exactly what you just said. So maybe this is just the way that I need to process it. Are you saying that like when I'm looking at GA4, I'm not looking at traffic, impressions, clicks, and whatnot from other search engines? Is it just Google's slice of what is happening?
Well, to answer your question, it will show you all of the traffic. And when we say traffic, let's change that to clicks. It will show you all of the clicks, where they're coming from, if everything is tagged with a UTM tag. But let's say that you're buying ads on Google, and let's say you're buying ads on Instagram, and you're buying ads on Facebook, on Meta. So yeah. You're on Meta, and you're on Google, and all of the ads on both places are sending people direct to your website. You're not using any of the in-ad stuff in Meta. Everything is clicked to go to your website. So what's going to happen is that one of the things that we know about Meta is that it builds awareness, okay? It's an awareness builder. The other thing we know about Meta is that it's an app. People don't like to leave apps. In fact, what happens is when they click, they see an ad is taking them out. They're like, oh, no, I want to keep scrolling.
Yeah.
And so they go back and they keep scrolling. That's why a lot of times you'll see in Meta that you may have had 1,000 clicks, but maybe only 75 actually showed up to your website because they went back. But what we see from all the measurement work that we do is that when you do a bunch of buys on Meta and you increase those impressions, what ends up happening sometimes in the next day or the next couple of days or even the next week, all of a sudden traffic to your website goes up. And when you look in GA4, it shows that these people just showed up on their own. Or it shows up that they went to Google, they typed in the name of your company, and they clicked on the first thing they saw, which is your Google ad for your company's name, your brand search ad.
Yeah.
And so who ends up getting credit for that? Google. Google says, hey, I brought that person to your website. Google doesn't know that that person saw the ad a couple of days ago on Facebook and they were thinking about clicking, but they wanted to keep trolling their old high school flame or something like that. They have no idea about that. But that's what happens. That's how marketing actually works. It takes time for it to sink in and build in. And since most people afterwards, they forget how to get to your website, they'll Google it.
Yeah.
And who gets credit? Google gets credit, or it just shows up. So when you do these buys that you end up doing as a marketer, that 2 or 3 weeks later you say, oh, it didn't work. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, I don't know what I did, but wow, we're having more sales and more people are showing up. This is great. It's not Google. It's coming from the thing you did a couple of days ago, or even sometimes a couple of weeks ago, because that awareness building takes time. And that's the problem with Google Analytics. Is that it? Marketers are following the dots and it's pointing them in a direction of spend more money in Google. And when we think about marketing as a funnel, and Google is right down at the bottom of the funnel. And so when you spend all of your money on Google and take it away from places like Meta that are more up funnel, you're actually reaching fewer eyeballs. So your reach is substantially less. And what ends up happening is your marketing doesn't work as well.
What I'm taking away from what it is that you're saying is that GA4 shouldn't be your single source of truth because it's not telling you the entire picture. To your point, it is telling you what people are doing once they get there, which I'm a huge advocate for as well too. And it's interesting also that you're saying, or that you're talking about, your direct traffic is going up because people are typing in your name, but that's not a Google thing. And that's not even your website thing. It's because you've given them a place to look. And exactly what you're saying, people don't want to leave where that experience that they're in, right? Whether it's like on a flyer, especially on social media, and whether you're posting on social organically or you're doing, or executing a paid ad. So I'm right there with you in regards to that. I also, interestingly enough, tend to just look at direct and organic traffic. I'm looking at organic traffic because I want to know, is the content that I've put in there, are people actually going to it naturally? Am I answering the questions that people are searching for? To me, that's what organic tells me. Direct traffic tells me that people are searching for me more directly. And I've always liked to annotate within UA or, well, I don't annotate anymore in GA4. It's so, well, we'll dive into that later. But like, you know, I like to annotate, like, at what point did you start that one campaign? Because that's what I'm going to use. You know, you have to be able to find the correlation in the data and not just look at one spot, especially GA4. I think also one of the things that I find really tricky to understand is GA4's events that they've set up, the out-of-box events, which are way overstated. And I put no stock into it because I'm like, well, one, I didn't set it up. Like, it just is out of the box. It's setting it up and it's kind of counting everything. Now, if you're someone that is not well-versed enough, you're then reporting to executives like, hey, look at all these events that are happening. I've got all of these form fills and these scrolls. And it does tell you something, but until you go in there and actually tag it yourself and identify the things that are going to be meaningful, it's just almost fluff. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that in regards to GA4's events.
Yeah, they're kind of a mess. They really are. And but what I encourage everyone who's like listening today is like, if you want to like guarantee yourself like a career for the rest of your life or a great side hustle, is start digging in to GA4, because most people are lost. And I think what's happening out there for most marketers is they're just saying, this is really too complicated. I'm just going to let like the analytics person deal with this.
Yeah.
So if you start to play around with it, like on your own website or a friend's website, you'll really get really far ahead with things. You can create custom events, but it's a whole lot of work to get that done. And those standard ones, you really can't get rid of. They're really kind of odd in terms of that. But going back to the annotating thing, which is huge, and I know you're really big on making certain that when people are listening, they've got something that they can do.
Yes.
You know, what's something I can take away from this? All right, Jeff, you've really bitched a lot about GA4. I get it.
I mean, you're just saying what we're all feeling, Jeff. That's okay. It.
So I'm going to give most marketers, in addition to GA4, who are buying ads or are doing things, there's a Google sheet someplace on someone's machine that has every single day of the year, how much money you spent, where you spent it at, how many clicks came in, so that on this Google sheet, you can calculate what is my cost per click, what is my click-through rate, what is my cost per sale. And what I would say is go to that sheet right now, go up to the top, and right next to date, right after date, the first column you want to have, add a new column and call it impressions. And what you want to do is for the last year, go back for all your paid media and add up all of the impressions that you put into market every single day. It's not that tough. Like if you're buying ads on Meta, you would go and create a daily report. And chances are when you downloaded the report originally, impressions were there. You just never looked at it because you weren't interested in it. And then the other thing is that if you're doing content building like SEO and you've got access to, I still call it webmaster tools, sorry, but
we'll forgive you.
Oh, thank you. So you log into webmaster tools. That's what I call it on my bookmarks bar. Log in there and you can actually see the number of impressions that these different things are having. Start collecting those impressions. Now, another way, those are impressions that are actually seen. But what you can take from GA4 is you can treat those clicks on those pages as impressions because you know someone actually saw those articles. So you can actually, you could treat those as content impressions, if you will, because that's really what they are, is content impressions. Because no paid media is going to those. And I would add that to your paid media. You may want to add a second, if you're doing a lot of content work, you may want to add two columns, one for paid media impressions and one for content media impressions that you would get out of GA4.
Yeah.
And then now you can start to look at the total impressions, the total clicks per day. And what you're going to start to see is a trend where you're going to notice like a time lag between the impressions and the lag for awareness, where you see clicks go up. And you may start to see that you may even want to separate it more, maybe impressions for Meta versus impressions for Google.
Mm-hmm.
Just start to see that time frame. Because one of the things we know is that each media type has its own time to conversion, meaning for some of our clients, when they start a new Meta campaign, most people like to see an impact within 3 or 4 days. Some of our clients, their average days to conversion from the time awareness is start to be being built until the actual conversion event, it may take 45 days. And that may mean on average it's 45 days. It may mean for Meta, it's like 65 days. So that means you have to set expectations when you're starting a new campaign. So you want to start looking for those correlations, and having it all on a spreadsheet is like the first step to being able to see. And now you're aligning everything. Now it's an apples to apples, because you're looking at Google, you're looking at Meta, you're looking at your content, and it's all aligned in a single place. And then you can start to get crazy with some regression analysis and stuff, and maybe hire someone on Fiverr to do a little math for you.
Put together an algorithm or an equation, I should say, inside of Excel, so that you can create that really nice chart that goes in the presentation where you deliver like, this is what marketing did. You know, I think most people think that it's, you know, bumper stickers and flyers, but it is so much more than that. One thing, so you talked about just right now, kind of aggregating all of your impressions and your clicks on a spreadsheet. Now, I do know GA4 does have reports. What report, if any report, do you think, or maybe there isn't one in GA4 that is worth looking at and keeping?
I would say if I'm doing content and I'm creating content, what I want to do is I want to download a report over there. Remember, all the reports, you have to create them yourself.
Is also what I actually really don't like. I miss the baked in reports that I'm like, but it had all the things for me. And you really do have to dedicate time to be like, all right, what is the report? What's that one report that I would just click on to get all of that information? But I digress. I completely interrupted you. So yes, you have to build your own report.
But what is really cool about GA4 is that if you have access to GA4, you can also get access and create a free Looker account, which is a dashboard. Mm-hmm. And then what you can do is you've got access to all the different dimensions in GA4, and you don't actually have to go and create those crazy reports in GA4. You can now go in Looker and create them. And once you've created them in Looker, they're always going to be there for you. And they'll get updated every single day, or as sometimes GA4 takes a day and a half to update. But however often it updates, it updates. But what I would pull out, if I'm doing content, what I would pull out is I would pull out a report that gives me the number of sessions for each day for every single page on the website.
Okay.
Because content is usually created like on blog type pages. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's really easy. Sometimes all of the content is on /blog/whatever. Sometimes it's all over. But I would just create a report in Looker that has visitor user sessions, unique user sessions per day for every single page. And then what I can do is in Looker, I can select my date range. I can download it into a spreadsheet, and then I can get rid of pages like the home page, pages where any that is a landing page where paid media is going.
Mm-hmm.
And I can pull out the pages that the only way people would find it is if they went to Google and Googled like, you know, a 3 or 4 word phrase, because that's what I want. And then I would use those clicks as impressions for my content that I would then put into my big spreadsheet.
Ooh, I love it. That's a good juicy tip and insight. I've got just a couple more questions for you, because I always like to ask a kind of an emerging trend question. So if we're looking ahead, what kind of, or are you aware of any updates GA4 that we should be aware of to be prepped for as it stands now?
I would just say it's not going anywheres. And I would also say, even though I've bitched a lot about GA4, I don't want people to feel bad that they're using it, because some of the largest advertisers in the world still use it. The reason they use it is because, even though they know it's wrong, mm-hmm. they keep saying it's consistently wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes anyone feel better. I'll also say, as someone in measurement, and I've been here for a very long time, that all statistical models are wrong. Mm-hmm. Some are useful, and that your goal should be not to find something that's perfect, not to go from 0 to 20 real fast. Your goal is that next month, you want to be less wrong than you were this month. So you want to incrementally get less wrong over time. But never deceive yourself that you're correct, because that's never going to happen.
Well, and I feel like it's enough to get you, because I feel that so hard, what you just said, like it's consistent. It is the consistency that you're looking for. And right. I also don't ever look at, like, and I never have, even when it was just Universal Analytics, as that being the single source of truth, because there are the consistency is the inconsistency. So I'm not going to bet my house on it, but I can say directionally, I can see it going somewhere. Right. And then it's making those notes. I also think that's such a challenge for marketers in general. And I'm curious if you feel the same way as well. But for me, I have to gather so many numbers from so many different places. There, like, marketing lives in a place where there is not a single source of truth. I mean, when you work for a company, there is usually the CRM, whatever is happening in there. But there are so many things that a marketing team can make happen outside of the CRM that you have to be able to showcase those wins as well too. But like, I'm aggregating from 10 different spots, even if I'm being efficient.
Well, and that's the challenge for larger marketers. So imagine your budget is now $150 million a year.
Yeah.
Imagine all of the data wrangling that has to go on, and still the organization is looking at GA4. That's a real story across a multitude of clients. That's where my team and my platform comes in, because we take all of that aggregated data from different sources. It gets normalized. It gets statistically modeled so that we're deduplicating all of the different KPIs and conversions. So it then becomes a single source of truth across an entire organization. That's kind of the ultimate of where you want to get to. But for the DIYer, you take data out of GA4 and put it in your Google Sheet and make that your single source of truth.
Yeah.
Don't forget about those impressions, because that's your awareness driving. That's really what you're doing as a marketer. And if you're doing a good job of that, then everything else takes care of itself. But focusing solely on clicks, it'll lead you in the wrong direction, because what's happened for a lot of these large marketers, their marketing mix is out of balance. They are way overspending at the bottom of the funnel. And again, you're spending in an environment that is all bid-based, and CPC costs have gone through the roof. So if your budget is the same as it was last year, you're actually getting smaller reach, fewer number of clicks than you did last year. So you have to kind of move up funnel. And the only way you can do that is to start backing up and gaining a broader perspective by looking at impressions.
It's so true. Preach, Jeff, preach. Now, I do have one final question, and that is, if you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing advice that you give to yourself?
I would say the non-marketing advice I would give myself and I would give my younger self is that even though you can power through things, don't. It's not worth it. That when you, you know, when you're building a company, you can easily, when you're younger, burn the candle at both ends. You can give up vacations and birthdays because of emergencies and things like that. And what I would go back to my younger self is I would say to myself, you know, you need to give your body a break. You need to give your mind a break and you just need to chill. Because the reason is this, unless you're a cardiac surgeon, when you screw up, and we all do, nobody dies. Okay. Nobody dies. People may miss a deadline. People may get upset, but it can be easily fixed and easily remedied. But everyone lives. And chances are, even if you screw up really bad as a marketer, nobody's going to get fired because it's probably a quick fix. So it's not worth working overnight. It's not worth if you work from home. I know folks who, you know, a lot of us are doing remote work these days. They work from home. And because they're so worried about something, they will spend an entire 48-hour time frame, two full days. They will not even leave the house once. It just works straight through. And that's just, it's not worth it. So I would say for your own health and well-being, take a chill. This whole idea about multitasking, you can't do it. It's overrated. It doesn't work out. And just focus on one thing at a time. End your day at a reasonable time. Take your vacation time. Take your weekends and close your laptop and spend time with the folks that really matter to you and do the things you really want to do. Because your work is not who you are. It's what you do. And again, unless you're a surgeon, nobody's going to die. So it's okay.
I think that is such great advice. I have also said that as well too. Like you have to say that to yourself to like put yourself in perspective. Or I know for sure I do, right? Like I am a bit of a workaholic and I am not curing something. I'm just executing a campaign. And you know what's funny is it'll still be there in the morning.
That's right. That's right.
It'll still be there in the morning. So have dinner with your family, go out with your friends, play with the kiddos. I mean, do all of those things because once your cup is filled, you have more to give, not just to the others that you surround yourself with, but you also, ironically enough, have more to give at work too. When you have that balance, you are able to give a little bit more when it comes to it, as opposed to like burning the candle at both ends. So absolutely great advice. And I what a perfect way to end the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on here and just kind of sharing your thoughts on GA4 and also everything in between.
Welcome back. I hope that you found this episode just as intriguing as I did. Let's dive into the key takeaways. Now, the first key takeaway for me today is that GA4 has its limitations. Now, during this episode, there was more than a little bit of criticism towards GA4, more specifically being it being used as a tool for analytics. Now, the truth is that there are limitations to it that prevent it from being a single source of truth for any marketer. Jeff expressed the limitation being such a narrow focus on clicks and inadequate handling of impressions, which is enough to caution any marketer to be wary of what and how you use the information sourced from Google. The advice to walk away with from this, diversify your analytics portfolio. We pull from many sources to begin with as marketers, so don't rely solely on GA4 being your go-to for reality. Integrate other measurement techniques and platforms that really account for a wider range of interaction and behaviors. So aim for a more well-rounded view that includes impression-based and cross-platform performance analysis. Think of GA4 more as like your, I don't want to say compass, but more as your sense of direction. Key takeaway number two, impressions matter. And for this, I'm not just talking about first impressions, but those really matter too, my friends. You have to include impressions in marketing analytics to get a complete analysis of campaign performance of any campaign. Jeff went into this really in depth. The idea that when you're running a campaign, people don't want to leave whatever platform that they're in, right? But those impressions that you earned from that digital campaign, for example, are eyeballs and a step into getting them onto your website to take action. Think multi-touch attribution. Those impressions help get them to the last touch attribution of the website, if that's how you're measuring last touch, that is, because that's not always the last measurement. I won't go into the rabbit hole of attribution and what it is that you're measuring and what touch is most important, but it really is taking account for those eyeballs. What's the traction that got them to the point of that conversion? Incorporating impressions into marketing analytics allows for a more detailed understanding of really the campaign influence potential customers have at every stage of the marketing funnel. This holistic approach really enables us to refine our tactics, ensure that you're not only capturing attention but also fostering this meaningful engagement that leads to that conversion. Key takeaway number three, prioritizing work-life balance. I feel like we can't talk about this enough. So I love that Jeff called us out on the advice that he would give his younger self. It's not just in marketing, it's in most careers. Maintaining this work-life balance so you have more to give in your personal and professional life, and ways that you can do that. And mind you, I am not the champion. I don't always win in work-life balance, but these are also tools we mentioned, but also things that I actually try to do myself. One is setting strict work hours that you actually follow. So it's not just saying, you know, okay, I'm truly only going to work 9 to 5. Or I'm not going to power through lunch. You have to actually follow them, right? Making time for hobbies and family and living on the weekends so that you remain work-free when possible. These actions not only improve your quality of life and make your family, including your spouse, much happier, but they can also enhance your career professionally by preventing burnout and really encouraging that creative thinking. What did you take away from today's episode? I want to hear it. Let's keep this conversation going. A special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike, and thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic, but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.